Gentry v. Sevier. Mr. Zur. Zur.
May it please the Court, Paul Zur for Appellant Kenneth Gentry. This case involves a Fourth Amendment violation wrapped up in an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. Appellant Gentry was heading home when, without a warrant, without probable cause, and without even a reasonable suspicion that he was armed, officers stopped the defendant, patted him down, confiscated a garage door opener he was carrying, and started searching a wheelbarrow that he was pushing. Now, unless there are questions about the initial stop, the pat-down, or the confiscation of the opener, I'll turn immediately to the wheelbarrow search. Regarding that search, again, there was no warrant in this case to allow for it, and there was no probable cause to allow for that search. More than that, the items that the officers saw in plain view in the wheelbarrow didn't give them suspicion that there was something going on. And we know that from, of all places, the testimony of the arresting officer, James Likens. He testified, one, that he first believed Mr. Gentry that it was just his stuff, and second, what he saw in plain view at the top of the wheelbarrow just looked like old beat-up stuff. According to Likens, it wasn't until he started poking around the wheelbarrow and got underneath a yellow raincoat of some kind, again, his testimony, that he started to see items that made him start to develop a suspicion that something was going on. So again, that establishes that what was in plain view wasn't giving these officers any suspicion.
And was this at nighttime?
This was at nighttime.
And didn't the officer ask him if these items belonged to him or what was in there?
We don't know that from the record. We don't see anywhere that the prosecution asked the arresting officer at trial whether he had asked what was in what were the items in there.
Was it raining?
You know, it's unclear from the record. There's nothing in the trial testimony to suggest it was.
Was the raincoat covering items?
The raincoat was covering items, again, according to Officer Likens' own testimony.
So you don't think there was reasonable suspicion to inquire further or to check further?
There might have been suspicion. And I understand the court's intuition in this case. We have a guy who's pushing a wheelbarrow at night, dressed in camouflage clothing, and officers are stopping him based on a suspicious person report. There could be suspicion there. And there could have even been suspicion to warrant further questioning. But that doesn't raise to the level of probable cause that's required to allow for this wheelbarrow search. This goes back to this case is almost identical, I think, to Arizona v. Hicks, where officers had a suspicion that stereo equipment that they were looking at in a squalid apartment was stolen. But by pushing a turntable to see a serial number underneath, officers engaged in a...
But do you think they had... But if you say reasonable suspicion, that usually means they can do a pat-down search.
Reasonable suspicion of possible criminal activity. So that's enough to stop Mr. Gentry. That's not enough for the pat-down, which would have required articulable suspicion, again, not on the record, that Mr. Gentry was armed and dangerous.
I don't know. I would think if you have reasonable suspicion that someone is a burglar, you would be able to pat down the person, don't you think? Because burglars, I don't know how often they're armed, but they're regarded as dangerous people. So
officers might have had reasonable suspicion of something, but it's not necessarily suspicion of burglary. Again, using Likens' own testimony, he believed Gentry at first. When Gentry started talking to him, according to Likens, he believed that what Gentry was saying, that it was just his stuff. And he didn't have an opportunity to see things in the wheelbarrow that would have made him suspect burglary.
What made him decide to pat down?
According to Likens, Officer Likens, it almost seems like as part of his protocol, he routinely stops and pats down people in the first instance and asks questions later on. I almost think that this raises to a Monell claim if we were on the civil side. I'm going to rebuttal and I'll save my time.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Submit Clause?
May it please the Court. The Indiana Court of Appeals reasonably determined that Gentry's counsel was effective for not challenging the search or the stop, the Terry stop, of Mr. Gentry. Gentry was caught red-handed fleeing the scene of his crime. The police responded to...
No, wait, that's not responsive. What was the basis for patting him down?
The basis for patting him down is that Likens said when Gentry stopped, he turned, he waved at the police and was coming towards the officer. So when he got out of the police car, he immediately said, wait right there, and patted him down. So
well,
he had a fear for his safety.
And what was the suspicion? You can't just pat down people who approach you.
He had a fear that Gentry's action of coming towards the officer, he wanted to pat him down, stop the situation, and pat him down to see if
he was
dangerous.
In a menacing manner, or what?
I don't know. It's not in the record. And the Indiana Court of Appeals decided that the
pat
down was...
What if Gentry just assumed this officer wanted to, you know, speak to him? So he approaches him. I don't know. It sounds pretty unthreatening.
And we're not challenging anything having to do with the pat-down or the discovery of the garage door opener. And the Indiana Court of Appeals found that it was unconstitutional, that the frisk wasn't warranted. And
yes, but then why didn't the lawyer object? Why didn't the lawyer raise this issue?
Why didn't the trial counsel object to the admission of the garage door opener based on the frisk? I don't know.
But why
they chose
isn't that,
not to.
Why isn't that... ineffective assistance?
Because the garage door opener, the exclusion of the garage door opener amounts to nothing. The rest of the evidence shows that he stole the items in the wheelbarrow. And the items in the wheelbarrow...
I don't understand. If he hadn't been questioned, if the officer hadn't looked in the wheelbarrow, then how would he ever have been prosecuted?
Well, the wheelbarrow is an open container.
I don't know what you mean by open container. It's covered, you know, by his coat. Is it your notion that the police, if they see someone wheeling a baby carriage or something, or a wheelbarrow, because it doesn't have a closed lid, they can rummage around in it? That's
There's no indication that there was rummaging around in the wheelbarrow. There's no indication that the raincoat was covering the wheelbarrow.
I thought the officer didn't see anything that, you know, looked like stolen goods.
No, the officer said initially that the items in the wheelbarrow were not ones that one would normally be either A, transporting a wheelbarrow, let alone at 2:30 a.m. in the morning.
I thought he testified that it just was what he, until he got into the wheelbarrow, so to speak, it just looked like, you know, beaten up old stuff.
He said it did look like old stuff, and so he tended to believe that this was abandoned property, but he had reasonable suspicion based on everything else to keep investigating.
What was the everything else? But even if you have reasonable suspicion, that's not a basis for a search. That's a basis for a pat-down, but you're supposed to get a warrant for a search.
Mr. Gentry's claim has morphed into one of, oh, we need a warrant to view the contents of an open wheelbarrow, that stuff is falling out, and a raincoat is not covering.
I say open wheelbarrow. The wheelbarrow is open, but its contents apparently were not visible.
Yes, they were visible, and the record shows
nothing
that.
Nothing at the bottom of the wheelbarrow was visible, because it's covered by other things.
There was a pile of contents,
well,
yes.
Well, you had to search it. Now, what's the basis for searching a wheelbarrow? Why is it different from a car or anything, right?
Because we have a person who's out on a public street.
No, you could get a warrant. That's not the question. The question is, are you allowed to search a wheelbarrow or other, you know, people go down the street, they have something that looks like a baby carriage and it's full of they've been shopping, you know, it's like a shopping cart and so on. Are those things, say a shopping cart, people go around, you know, with shopping carts, carrying things, because they're not driving. Can the police just come up and, on basic reasonable suspicion, search what's in a shopping cart?
just focusing on your hypothetical only, I think they can look, use a flashlight, and look at the outside of whatever contents are on the outside of the pushing cart.
Right.
Yes.
I suppose they look on the outside and they see something suspicious. Can they then search the inside of the shopping cart, or do they have to get a warrant?
I think it would depend on what you mean by search. Could they?
I mean by search that they reach in to find out what else is in the shopping cart that they couldn't see.
I think there could be other circumstances.
Is that a search? Is that, answer my question. Is that a search?
Yes.
And do they need a warrant?
No.
Why not?
Because there are exceptions to the warrant.
What is the applicable exception here? I mean, in my hypothetical case.
In your hypothetical?
Yes.
Without more, I cannot tell you what it is, other than exigency.
Without more, I just told you the police officers have decided, having listened to your argument, that, if they see a suspicious-looking shopping cart, it's being pushed by some questionable-looking person, they can stop and they can reach inside the shopping cart and they can look at at things without a warrant. That's your proposition.
No.
No?
No.
What do they need in order to be able to do that without a warrant?
Something more.
Suspicion.
Yes.
I gave
more.
You suspicion. Suspicion is not usually a basis for a search. Suspicion is a basis for a Terry stop, which is not supposed to be a search of. It's a search for weapons nominally, and I don't understand how a Terry stop enables you to search the shopping cart. Unless you have a concern.
It might concern
there's a weapon or something.
In your hypothetical, I agree, there are no exigent circumstances that would require.
Well, were there exigent circumstances here?
Yes, absolutely.
What?
That he was caught running from the scene of the crime.
What does that have to do with exigent circumstances?
Well, there's destruction of evidence.
Well,
the
police officer can stop him, can put him in his police car while he gets a search warrant.
It would be a search incident to a lawful arrest.
Counsel, you stated that the pat-down, you admitted it was unconstitutional. The frisking, getting the...
We have not challenged the Indiana court.
And you said, but you got to the evidence to other means, correct?
Correct.
The other means was a receipt, right, inside the wheelbarrow.
That was one of the other means.
And that's correct. What you got after the officer went underneath the raincoat, checked inside the wheelbarrow.
No, there were more than one officers at the scene. There are no facts to determine when and how the toolbox was opened. It was not opened by Officer Likens, who was the only officer that testified at trial. So there was never a challenge to this at trial. These facts were never developed. He raised an ineffective assistance of counsel claim.
Other than the wheelbarrow, what evidence did the officer find that gave them reason to find that a crime was committed?
There were the victims of the crimes who woke up the next morning, discovered that their garages were broken into, called the police.
That's not my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He was pushing a wheelbarrow, correct?
Yes.
And other than that, what else did they find?
Well, they have the the concerned citizen who heard banging.
That's not finding something. Physical evidence. If it was a homeless person walking with a cart with lots of clothing in there, would they have reason to go into that cart?
Just a homeless person walking?
Yes.
No.
What's the difference here?
The wheelbarrow also had Brand, which was the name of a nearby construction company. He was wearing camouflage.
So can't homeless person borrow a cart from a construction company and roll down the street?
Yes, they can borrow it, but just because there is...
Or a cart from grocery store, a Jewel cart or a Dominic's cart?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Or any other cart from a grocery store.
I don't think we have Jewel stores in Indiana. No, he cannot just go into willy-nilly into anybody's cart and search the contents of the cart other than what's on top. But here, the facts weren't the facts were not developed in this case because the defendant chose to raise this as an IAC claim on direct appeal. And so he was stuck with the minimal Your Honor, I'm sorry, my time
suppose
is up.
Suppose he's walking along and he has a suitcase, and on the suitcase it says, this suitcase contains the spoils of my career as a criminal. Can the police arrest him and open the suitcase without a warrant?
No.
That's a problem for you. You talk about a search incident to an arrest, but you say no, they couldn't open. There's a case, Justice Stevens' case, about that.
Your Honor, if I may, Gentry's claim.
So you say that, you know, the they couldn't search the suitcase, even though they're perfectly certain as to what's inside. But if it's a wheelbarrow, somehow there's a different rule, and they can search inside. That's so strange, right? You need a warrant for that.
The U.S. Supreme Court has routinely treated items like briefcases, purses, luggage different from other types of containers.
No, they haven't.
At airports, maybe.
No.
I'm sorry?
At airports, maybe.
At airports, on buses.
They don't even allow you to squeeze the, you know, squeeze this.
The Fourth Amendment analysis has routinely looked at what if you're in a public place.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. Unless, you know, there's some really special circumstance, they can't look inside a suitcase, even if they have probable cause. They need to get a warrant.
If it's in an automobile, they can look inside.
We're not talking about automobiles. We're not. That's a whole special world, the automobile. There's no wheelbarrow world here. And anyway, what's odd about
it is... There's no wheelbarrow world.
Look, you have to really argue that somehow it would have been of no significant advantage to the lawyer if he'd gotten all this stuff suppressed. Right? Because you're not challenging the unconstitutionality of the search. So suppose that the lawyer had said, you know, it was an illegal search, everything, the garage door opener, the stuff in the wheelbarrow, all that has to be suppressed. Wouldn't it have been very difficult to convict Gentry without any of that stuff?
It would be difficult to tie him to the case.
So why isn't it a classic case where the lawyer did not provide professionally adequate assistance because he didn't make a challenge which would have succeeded and would have probably gotten his client acquitted?
What kind of challenge? Whether there was a warrant to or probable cause to search the wheelbarrow? His claim in the district court was that the Terry stop was invalid. The stop was invalid, therefore any search was invalid.
All he had to do was to say that even if it was a lawful Terry stop, the police officer was not entitled to search the wheelbarrow, and that the contents of the wheelbarrow therefore should be excluded from the trial. Wouldn't that have been a significant benefit to Gentry for the lawyer to have argued that?
It could have. We won't know in this case because the facts were never developed about what was searched, how it was searched, and when it was searched.
Because the lawyer didn't do his job, right?
No, he could have done that on post-conviction, but he didn't. He raised it as a direct appeal claim, and so they were tied with the minimal bare-bones recitation of what occurred at the trial court. Those facts were never developed because he should have raised it in post-conviction where he could have put on the evidence to support his claim, and he did not.
Well, why isn't that actionable?
In habeas review, ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel is not recognized as a claim of relief. And he never challenged his appellate counsel's performance in raising this as an IAC on direct appeal. He's never challenged that.
So that's your argument. It's a forfeiture having nothing to do with the legality of the search.
Is well, he's never even raised an IAC claim about whether a warrant was required to search the wheelbarrow. In the district court and in this trial court, it was based solely on that the initial stop was illegal. Therefore, any subsequent search or questioning should have been suppressed. He's never challenged an ineffective, never raised an ineffective assistance of counsel claim based on a warrantless search of the wheelbarrow. It's only until his reply brief here on habeas that he's come up with this claim.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. McLose. So, Mr. Sewer?
Couple points. Obviously, appellate counsel in the state appellate court didn't raise ineffective assistance of appellate counsel. He was the counsel. On post-conviction, acting pro se, Mr. Gentry did raise, through the entire court system in state court, satisfying Borkel, ineffective assistance of appellate counsel. He raised it again in his habeas brief to the district court, to the lower court here. And the only other point I'd like to make about trial counsel's ineffective assistance regarding the motion to suppress and his failure to bring one, Mr. Gentry actually filed a pro se motion to suppress in this case. And it's unclear from the record whether trial counsel withdrew that motion or just failed to act on that motion, but there's nothing in the record to show what happened to that motion other than the court didn't rule on it. And obviously from the record we know that trial counsel didn't raise any objections at trial to the introduction of any of the evidence found in the wheelbarrow or that flowed from the search of the wheelbarrow.
Did the state, I was a little surprised by what Ms. Miklos was said at the end of her argument. I don't recall, did the state argue that point about forfeiture?
I don't remember seeing it anywhere.
I don't see it in her brief.
The state might be arguing in the state appellate court. There's a footnote that says that the state appellate lawyer on appeal didn't independently raise a wheelbarrow search. But that's not forfeiture or waiver. What the court's really saying there is that almost the state appellate lawyer was required to come up with every possible response the state would have made in its briefing to the court and then put those responses up front in his opening brief to the court. And that's just not the law.
Isn't the we got 2:30 in the morning and he's trotting down the street and the raincoat partially covers, right? Some of the way. That's what I thought the record said. Partially
covers? It says different things at different points in the record.
Yeah, and then he speaks about picking this up at the dumpster. That dialogue is okay, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, but he can't identify the dumpster's location, but the officer is familiar with the areas where there might have.
He's somewhat familiar with the area.
Well, anyway, the response Mr. Gentry is that he can't seem to identify where he recently arrived.
Well, part of the problem with the problem with that dumpster testimony is that we're not sure chronologically when it occurs. We don't know if it occurs after the pat-down, but before the search of the wheelbarrow, or during the search of the wheelbarrow, or even perhaps after the search of the wheelbarrow. And I think that chronology is critical. Not critical, but it is an important factor in that determination. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Zuer and Ms. Miklos. You were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the client. And the court will be in recess. Whoops.